Hi, welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are broadcasting from two very hot steamy shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. And there is, on top of this repurposed shipping container, a garden that produces food for the restaurant. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the gardeners of Groundworks, Inc. We build, design, build, and maintain gardens throughout New York City. And our show, We Dig Plants, aims to bring the culture to horticulture. Now, on today's show, we will be talking about protecting our nation's agriculture, our native landscapes, and our food supply from foreign invaders of the plant and animal kind.
Dun, dun, dun.
So what do I mean by invaders? Well, you know, most gardeners here in the Northeast have heard of the terrible problem with the Japanese longhorn beetle and its voracious appetite for many of our hardwood trees. And of course, southern gardeners have had to do battle with kudzu vine running rampant for decades. These plant and animal species came from somewhere else, and left unchecked can do irreparable damage to our native ecosystems. So what are we doing about it as a nation, and who is in charge of protecting our agricultural and plant resources?
Obama.
This year? Well, that would be the USDA, and they have a special department called APHIS, dedicated to protecting our nation from potentially dangerous foreign plants, pests, and pathogens.
APHIS is not to be confused with aphid.
That's right.
Gardener pun.
So to introduce and enlighten us on this broad and really important topic, we have as our guest Alan Green, who is the Executive Director for PPQ's Plant Health Programs. Welcome, Alan.
Thanks, Carmen. Welcome.
Alan Green has been the executive director for PPQ's Plant Health Program since 2004, and he provides the leadership in the day-to-day management of a wide array of programs, including management of the phytosanitary issues, permits, quarantine policy, taxonomic services, regulatory coordination, and strategic planning, among many other things. Alan graduated with a master's degree in plant pathology from Rutgers University. A local guy. That's great.
Right. From Brooklyn.
Yeah, you're good. From Brooklyn? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Okay,
what part of Brooklyn?
What street?
Bensonhurst.
That's where I live. That's so weird. We'll have to talk.
See, 1 in 8 people you meet is from Brooklyn.
That's right. This is really great. So we know we're going to have a really good conversation. Now, Alan has 28 years experience in the USDA, beginning his career in 1979 with the Federal Grain Inspection Service in Philadelphia. And he's had many, many different positions within APHIS. Now, Alan, tell us what I threw around some letters. Tell us what PPQ and APHIS stands for and what its mission is.
Okay, thanks. APHIS, or the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, is charged with protecting the nation's animal and plant resources. I would say our primary mission is preventing the entry of exotic pests and diseases that threaten our agriculture and our environment. We have a wide variety of programs, though, that include surveillance for pests and diseases, management of introduced pests. Mm-hmm. We even do things in APHIS like wildlife damage management and promoting animal welfare. My role in APHIS is purely on the plant side as mm-hmm. executive director of our plant protection and quarantine, or PPQs, plant health programs. Our plant health program's emphasis is purely on pest exclusion. We defend what we consider the nation's resources through various programs to prevent the introduction and spread of exotic pests and diseases by targeting things like cargo, which could be a host or a pathway for exotic pests and diseases, international travelers,
right,
conveyances that can carry these things, even mail and express carriers.
Uh-huh.
We try to exclude the pests, but pest exclusion is what we call a safeguarding continuum that starts offshore with collecting information that could be useful about emerging pests and outbreaks that threaten us, using that information to create regulatory policy, and then doing things like informing our domestic partners to do surveillance or trapping for that pest, telling our partners at Customs and Border Protection what the pest looks like, how it travels on a fruit or a flower or something like that, what to look for.
Or in somebody's pocket.
Or in someone's pocket, which is common. And an example is sort of puts it in focus is we've recently become aware of a fairly serious pest. It's a tomato leaf miner, and the name is Tuta absoluta, which always puts a smile on people's faces, but it's actually a very serious tomato pest that was in South America and has spread to Europe. And we don't trade much with tomatoes from South America, but we do buy a lot of tomatoes, as you might see in the store, from Europe. And we realized that we weren't fully protected there. So we changed our regulatory policies. We don't allow field-grown tomatoes. We have very strict safeguards for the greenhouse-grown tomatoes, even in Europe. We've alerted Customs and Border Protection what the pest looks like, to be on the lookout, especially if there's stems and calyxes, the green parts that come on tomatoes nowadays. And we've even talked to our domestic partners about surveillance and survey, and you know, to be on the lookout so they could catch the pest if it is introduced in the United States. So that's the kind of safeguarding continuum that we work with in pest exclusion.
And in fact, aphids, from what I was reading when I was doing research, kind of started after the is it true the Japanese sent over a first batch of cherry trees as a gift in 1910?
Yes.
Okay, and they had some kind of problem, and they had to actually be rejected. Isn't that right?
Yes, the first shipments were rejected. There's Oriole and fruit moth and other pests were found on them, and there was terrible pictures of the trees being burned. But eventually, the trees were introduced safely from Japan, so it was a success story. But that was the origin of aphis, and realizing that there's real threats out there that could harm our environment and our agriculture, and trying to do something to prevent that.
So can you give us some examples of foreign pests and plants that are now a serious threat to our agriculture or landscape, other than the tomato that you just talked about?
Sure. You actually alluded to one of them, the Asian longhorn beetle, and there's a number of very serious environmental pests, primarily forest pests that threaten us. They very often come in things like crates and wood packing material. And the problem was that for 200 or more years, we dealt with Northern Europe. That's who we traded with. And we sort of knew the pests, and we had things in place to prevent them. But starting in the 1990s, we were sort of unprepared for the huge volumes of trade that started coming from China and some of the other Asian trading partners. And they were temperate pests. They have environments very like the United States, but totally different pests. And what happened is they were traveling in the wood packing material in the crates, and that's how we got Asian longhorn beetle, as you know all too well, in New York.
It's horrible. It's really a serious problem.
Yes, and maple trees, a lot of the hardwoods.
Yeah.
And the emerald ash borer was introduced into Michigan, and this is a catastrophic pest. It only hits ash trees, but I've seen neighborhoods like in Michigan where they planted all ash trees where every tree is dead from this pest, and it is spreading.
Dutch elm. Yeah.
It's exactly like a disease, like the Dutch elm. That's right. And places like Minnesota, where it's a very important forest pest, it's potentially devastating. So we have taken action. We now require all wood packing material to be heat treated against these woods. It has to be heated for a period of time at a certain temperature to kill the pests inside. But it was kind of too late for emerald ash borer.
And
we do have eradication programs, as you know, though, for Asian longhorn beetle.
So that's done, just so we understand the process, that's done when it comes into the United States?
Or before?
Before. And it has to have an international stamp on it. And Customs and Border Protection routinely checks the wood packing material. And as an inspector, you used to find this wood infested almost all the time. And now it's very rare, and it's usually because people cheat on the markings. And we do things when we find that also.
Yeah.
We re-export the cargo. We don't let it in if we find that they've cheated on the the treatment.
Right.
But another way things move in the United States, like emerald ash borer, is firewood. And I just would like to mention that very often your ash tree dies in your backyard because it has emerald ash borer. So what do? You cut it down and use it for firewood when you go camping in the next state. And that's really how it moves around. People leave some infested firewood behind, and suddenly it's 100 miles away, or more, you have an infestation. And we actually have if you look on the web on don'tmovefirewood.org, is a really good information about not using local your firewood, to use local firewood
local,
at campgrounds
right.
For that reason.
Yeah.
So this sounds like a really serious problem. Can you quantify it for us in sort of economic terms and in terms of our food security? How serious is the sort of pest problem, not just the emerald ash borer, but what can it cost us if it's not, you know, regulated and checked?
Well, there's many different types of losses. And an example is not so much an environmental but an agricultural pest, like the light brown apple moth was recently introduced into California from New Zealand and or Australia. It could have come with passenger baggage, like you said, in someone's pocket. It could have come on cargo. But that attacks a wide variety of fruit, like apples, pears, citrus grapes, and some ornamentals, roses, a number of ornamentals. And you have the field losses, but you also farmers have to spray a lot of pesticide to control it. So you have the field losses, the pesticide, the cost of pesticide, and the environmental concerns about pesticide. And then you have sometimes losses in export markets. Countries want to protect themselves against that pest. And we have hundreds of millions of dollars in exports in those commodities alone that gets threatened by that kind of a pest like that. So mm-hmm. a single pest really could have the potential for tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of losses in exports.
Right, right. So how do you coordinate with other nations so that we can keep abreast of these diseases?
Well, there's a number of things. When there's an International Plant Protection Convention, and it establishes sort of rules of plant protection. And when countries do have new pests, like outbreaks, like we have light brown apple moth, there are ways that you tell the world about it. You sort of announce that, so countries can take actions to sort of protect themselves. And in addition to that, we have a number of programs like. Offshore Pest Information Program we have people overseas that work with universities, with foreign governments, to try to identify emerging pests like that tomato miner in Europe. You identify these pests so you could take action. And we have like a team of analysts that speak a number of languages that search the web for open sources of information about pest outbreaks in South America or Asia or something like that. So we have the people overseas. We have these kind of analysts. And, you know, we do use that information for regulatory action. And then we have other programs like where we work with foreign countries in Asia. There's a pest called Asian gypsy moth that it's different than the gypsy moth in the eastern United States in that Asian gypsy moth attacks conifer trees like pines or spruce. Mm-hmm. And the females fly so it could disperse farther.
Quickly,
we don't want that pest. We consider it a very serious pest. And we work with the foreign countries. What happens when the lights come on the piers when they're loading the ships, it attracts the females. They lay their eggs on the containers and on the ships.
Wow.
And they find them all the time, both overseas and at our ports. So we work with the foreign countries to control the Asian gypsy moths in the ports and to inspect the containers and the ships to clean off and destroy any egg masses. And then we do the same thing when the ships arrive in the United States. We check the containers and the ships for egg masses. So that's the kind of thing where we work with our trading partners to mutually try to reduce the pest threat that comes to the United States.
So you guys have a big kind of wanted poster, right?
Yeah.
Or unwanted poster.
Unwanted poster, right.
lots of unwanted pests, yes.
Well, we have to take a break.
Sure.
We'll be back in 1 second with Alan Green. And you're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
Course for Washington, D.C.
Both ships are broadcasting on several frequencies. I can't decipher what they're saying. The words are apparently directed at each other.
Here they come.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. You were just listening to an appropriately titled song called Invaders from the Planet by DJ Revolution. Did you enjoy that, Alan?
Very much.
Little hip-hop, little Brooklyn hip-hop.
Put that on
your
website. I'd just like to start the second segment by reading some statistics to just show our listeners how much work you guys have to do. You have 17 plant inspection stations, is that correct?
Yes.
And you, APHIS, has inspected more than 1.3 billion non-endangered plants and plant parts, excluding seeds, more than 33 million endangered plants and plant parts, excluding seeds, and more than 1.4 million kilograms of seeds. And APHIS has intercepted more than 3,300 quarantine-significant pests or diseases and treated more than 17 million plants or plant parts and more than 15,000 kilograms of seeds. That's some data from 2006, from what I was able to gather. So you have a lot of material to inspect and to deal with.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
So can you tell us some examples of some weird and strange items that you've had to confiscate, and what do you do with them?
Well, as far as what we do with them, when we find pests that are considered quarantine significant pests at a port of entry, we'll either, if there is a treatment like a fumigation, we'll treat it, but very often we'll have to re-export it or destroy the material if there is no treatment. Some of the strange things that I would say that came to mind. Recently, it was a couple of years ago, actually, we became aware that Christmas trees that were showing up in the box stores and some of the craft shops, they were made out of the limbs of plants from Asian countries. And what looked like really innocuous when we inspected these, when we cut into the wood, we were finding serious forest pests in the wood on these Christmas trees. And it resulted in us banning that type of Christmas tree. And we're still working with the foreign governments to come up with an appropriate treatment that we feel would be safe. But here you had a really innocuous item that turned out to be a pathway for serious pests.
Wow, so that was like not a living plant, but
like
just
an artificial
tree that had a wooden stem, is what you're saying.
Right, it was limbs of trees they were using, like about 3 inches in diameter as the trunk of the Christmas tree, and it had bark on it, and it had, I guess, enough moisture and life that it was supporting these beetle larvae that dig into the wood.
Another reason to avoid the fake Christmas tree.
Yeah. Well, if your philosophy is, you know, buy local, get your firewood local, get your food local, you know, then you would be less likely to introduce, you know, pests and, you know, noxious weeds. Mm-hmm. But we didn't get into too much about, we've done a lot on insects. What about plants? Let's talk about plant pests that and how they get introduced a little bit.
Okay. You mean like on plants? Like you say, plant material is inspected at the plant inspection stations. Those 17 plant inspection stations that you were mentioning. And the thing about plants for planting is, unlike an orange or something, when you plant a plant, the pest has a home instantly. It's the risk of
cultivated.
Yeah, of it staying and being introduced and spreading is much greater when you bring it in on a plant. And that's why we have a fairly strict regulations for planting material for living plants.
That's why I can't bring my Bankacea over from South Africa.
Yes, and thank you for not doing that.
Yes.
We'll get into that a little bit later about what you're allowed to bring and how. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about invasive plant species, Alan. How does that happen? And give us some examples of that. And, you know, like the kutsu vine and other things that were a problem.
Yes, there's really hundreds of what we consider noxious weeds. And we are in the process of finalizing a regulation that's going to greatly increase the number of plants that we're prohibiting because they've been recognized internationally as being weeds. There's a soda apple tree in Florida that is sort of an innocuous plant, but it sort of starts taking over the Everglades when it's introduced.
Right.
The kudzu plant, the mile a minute plant that we have it here in Maryland. It's probably in New York as well.
Uh-huh.
It really just covers things up, and there is just many plants that, especially in the absence of their native biocontrol organisms, they just spread rampantly when they're introduced, and they're tremendous weed problems.
Right, like the Phragmites that are all over the Jersey Turnpike and all through Maryland and New York and any kind of water-induced area, and they just take over.
Yeah, yeah.
So where, for example, you gave an example of how the pests come in. An example was the Christmas tree stems. How did these noxious plants get in? Do you have an idea of how this happened?
Was this like turn of the century, you know, lack of knowledge, and they came in via gardeners, or
it's very often just as contaminants on things that there'll be some sort of straw-like material or packing material, and when you look at it closely, it's full of weed seeds. Some of the grains are almost invariably infested with weed seeds. Things that you would never expect, like the vents in a maritime container where the air comes in. When you look on the screens, you find weed seeds. It really could come in on someone's clothing even, and then even there's things like water spinach where it's considered a noxious weed, but people bring it in and they cultivated it because it's a food in Asia.
Right. Right.
So it's a wide variety of inadvertent and deliberate ways that it really just takes one seed in many cases, if it's self-pollinating, to cause an outbreak of a plant.
So you said you're getting more stringent about controlling the invasive plants. From what I had read, after the events of 9/11, there was a new sort of Bioterrorism Act of 2002, is that right, Alan?
Yes.
And how did that impact your department and what you all are doing now?
Okay, for our department, that focuses mostly on agents that are considered very dangerous, and for them to be used in laboratories, like on the human front, something like anthrax.
Oh, okay.
Very dangerous. You don't want people taking that in, but at the same time, you want to allow some research on it. So on the plant side, there are some serious plant diseases that are also listed under this act. And what APHIS does is we regulate the laboratories. We have strict permitting for these dangerous organisms.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone could get it. You actually have to sort of have some sort of a background check to be able to import or move interstate these serious plant pathogens or human pathogens.
Mm-hmm.
And the laboratories have strict containment requirements, security, making sure that nothing could escape from the laboratory. That's with APHIS. We regulate the facilities, the containment facilities that deal with these serious listed plant pest disease agents.
Wow.
So what advice can you give the casual gardener who just wants to bring back a botanical souvenir from abroad?
Okay.
Other than don't do it.
the two pieces of advice would first do your homework and then declare everything when you arrive at the port of entry. And we regulate by the type of plant or the scientific name of the plant and the country of origin. And as you said, there's these inspection stations, but many plants really are allowed enterable into the United States. But what we require is a document from the foreign country called a phytosanitary certificate. It's actually issued by the foreign country saying it came from that country, it is this genus and species of plant, it's free of pests and diseases. And the way to find out what is enterable is really on the APHIS website, aphis.usda.gov. If you search through there on imports, you will be able to find the plants that are prohibited into the United States or have strict restrictions. But everything else is enterable. So if you could find out that your plant is enterable, then the next thing is you'd need a phytosanitary certificate overseas.
Right.
And there's a website. It's the International Plant Protection Convention, IPPC. Their website lists all the contacts in each country that responsible for issuing phytosanitary certificates. So if you want to know how to get a phytosanitary certificate in France, that's where you would have to start.
So in other words, don't just dig a plant. You see a plant somewhere in your friend's garden in France. You can't just dig it up, put it in a small pot, and stuff it in your luggage. That's just not going to fly, right?
It's not going to fly.
Yeah.
And the other rule is you can't bring in growing medium. You really have to wash off all the roots, all the soil and growing medium from the roots, and just sort of wrap it in newspaper.
Right.
But if you can get the phytosanitary certificate from that country and you take the soil off and it is enterable, small lots of 12 or less plants can come into the United States.
With the certificate.
With the certificate, yes. Then the other thing is seeds can come in too, and they don't need the certificate, but they do need a permit. And yet you have to go on our website, and there's something called electric permits or e-permits that you would apply for a permit in advance. And if you had the permit and the seeds were enterable, you can't come in without the phytosanitary certificate at the airport.
Well, and chances are also there's a nursery here in the United States that has what you're what you found, you know, if you do some research.
Almost 95%.
Yeah, and they're set up to get the certificate and to, you know, to fill out all the forms and everything. But, you know, when you go to Hawaii or you go to the Bahamas or you go, you know, in the summer.
And you just want to bring back some of those grapefruits, you know, or
some, you know, a lot of times I bet it's orchids that people bring through that they really want that are probably rare here or more expensive, and they just kind of want to smuggle them in, you know?
Orchids also fall into the Convention in International Trade and Endangered Species. The
I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you about that. That's another area that you also sort of oversee, right? You have to look out for that people aren't bringing in endangered species.
Right. Trilliums.
We do check that at the plant inspection stations, and Customs and Border Protection at the airports will check that you have the proper permits for endangered species. And orchids, probably orchids and cactus are the two biggest, like, because they're regulated by family for as endangered species. You're right. Orchids are a problem in that regard.
So how is it then? I mean, you know, you all have your kind of checklists, and you're all plant people, but then there's, you know, the guy who has the job at JFK, you know, who's not a horticulturist, and he has to all of a sudden learn all of this information.
Well,
that's part of your training, is that right?
Yes, and since 2003, at the ports of entry like JFK Airport, there's agricultural specialists working for Customs and Border Protection. They are agricultural specialists. They have the degrees in biology. They go through the training, and then we also have a plant inspection station for plant material that's APHIS specialists of entomologists and plant pathologists and botanists at the plant inspection station. Those will be working for APHIS at JFK. So you really will have both, but the first pair of eyes that sees it will be the Customs and Border Protection agricultural agent. They're very well trained, and you know they did everything that we did when USDA was at the ports of entry.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been very, very eye-opening.
Okay.
And we really appreciate all the work that you all do to keep us safe.
We'll put a link to your website on our Facebook fan page.
Great.
So that people can get more information. There's lots to know about this, and we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, Alan.
It's a pleasure. A very welcome anytime. We're always happy to do that.
Thank you.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, you've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. This show will be available for listening via archive at heritageradionetwork.com and also via podcast. We will be posting a link, as I said, to APHIS's website on our Facebook fan page. I'd like to thank our sponsor today, Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. We'd also like to thank Jack Inslee for producing and Nat Wiener for engineering, and to Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Thanks for listening. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.